Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi guys, and welcome to Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney. My name is Siobhan.
My name is Levins.
And every week we read a giant stack of comic books and let you know which are the ones that are worth your time.
And if you want to buy any of these potentially fantastic comics yourself, you can find them at 310 Pitt Street in the city, which is the address of King's Comics. Mm-hmm. Or you can find them online at kingscomics.com. This week, we read a whole bunch of comics, slightly less than last week, so we don't need the timer. But we're going to try and be quick so we can chew through all these comics as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
We've got some new DC Rebirth on the way. The fourth issue of Goldie Vance, the end of the first story arc, which was exciting to read.
So good.
A few things. A lot of second issues of things that we liked to begin with. Did we like them the second time around? Let's find out. Let's kick straight off with a big chunk of Rebirth stuff. There were three new DC number ones. Two of them fall under the Rebirth banner. I feel like the Rebirth issues only exist because they're aware of this podcast and they want to be featured in First Things First.
It's got to be it, right?
2 weeks in a row. Because First Things First is the segment in which we review all of the new number ones that came out in the last week. And so we're going to kick things off with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number mm-hmm. one, Nightwing Rebirth number one, and New Superman number one. Now, of these two Rebirth issues, which are Nightwing and Green Lantern, I'm going to say one of them did everything that a Rebirth issue should absolutely do, and the other one was just a completely pointless issue that I don't think anyone really needed to read. Guess which one I'm talking about.
I actually have no idea. I feel like it could go either way.
Okay. I loved Nightwing number one. I thought
it did
an incredible job of kind of wrapping up. If you didn't read all the Grayson stuff before this, it did a really great job of wrapping up a few of the storylines that were included in that.
That's true.
And the art by Yannick Paquette was
holy
just
moly.
A million out of 10. I don't just think so he's good. Actually continuing on, though, as the main artist on this, which is a bit of a bummer.
That's a bit of a shame.
But I just think, I don't know, this just really kicks me off into like, oh man, I cannot wait to read a Nightwing comic week to week. And the little flashes of like, you know, like his relationship with Midnighter, which I really enjoyed in the mm-hmm. Midnighter book. And like, you know, they're you know, very, very close friends who kind of almost flirt with each other. Which I think is a really fun kind of
relationship. Yeah, it's great. More of that.
And then even the Court of Owls stuff, which is not something that I've kind of been privy to for years, I guess since that initial Scott Snyder run.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun to kind of check in with them again and the weird status quo facing them. It definitely wraps up some weird stuff with apparently there was a bomb implanted in Damian Wayne's brain.
Yep, that was weird.
That was weird, but that's dealt with. But I don't know, I just think overall it closed the chapter on Dick Grayson working with Spiral
mm-hmm.
and kind of explained that, you know, no matter who he's been, he's had so many different names. He's always been Dick Grayson. And this time he's going, you know, for now on, he wants to be Nightwing and he's got his old blue costume back and everything's fucking good in the universe.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely like, it wasn't the most offensive of the Rebirth titles. I just felt again, like it felt slightly superfluous to me. Like I'd rather just be straight into what is actually going on.
Sure, I get
but
that.
But totally a good issue.
I didn't read all of Grayson, so there were things
neither.
That I was quite happy to kind of have like, oh, that's what he's been doing this last time.
Mm.
And I feel like it was, you know, it genuinely only showed you three pages worth of each story wrapping up.
Yeah.
And it was really, I don't know, I think the pacing of this was really, really great. We didn't even say who it was why. It was by Tim Seeley, who wrote alongside Tom King pretty much all of that Grayson run. Mm-hmm. And again, art by Yannick Paquette, and which was just a joy to read.
Man, Yannick Paquette is a real talent.
Yeah, I mean, Nightwing, Dick Grayson, whatever you want to call him, he's always been top five DC characters for me.
Totally.
And purely like as in like his, you know, his regular human alias. I reckon, you know, take the superhero shit away from him, and he is probably the best character.
He's still compelling
in DC's universe. So. He's just, you know, he's just a very endearing, hardworking, nice guy.
Mm.
You know, and that's kind of like all that. There are his three main tropes.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And a great butt.
Yeah, great butt, hardworking, nice.
Yeah.
So Good at flips.
I'm with you in that, like, these Rebirth titles, you know, they are kind of like this, they're not entirely necessary.
Yeah.
But I still had a blast reading this one.
Yeah, totally.
As opposed to
Hal Jordan Green Lantern Corps?
And the Green Lantern Corps, written by Robert Vendetti and Ethan Van Sciver on art. Robert Vendetti wrote a great deal of the Green Lantern stuff, either alongside Geoff Johns or taking over once Geoff Johns bowed out midway through the New 52. We get this kind of, apparently, like, everyone went missing from Green Lantern. I've not read many Green Lantern comics in the last few years.
No, me
obviously
neither.
We're reading the Green Lanterns.
But so again,
Rebirth
they're all
book.
Gone?
Yeah, I don't
know. It just seems like constantly all of the Green Lantern Corps are like, they're all dead, and then they're all back, and then they're all dead again.
But I do like Sinestro as a villain, and it's kind of cool to see him all withered and old.
Yeah,
and
old guy Sinestro is pretty cool. I don't really understand why he's old, but I'm into it.
And how come he gets a robe when his green girlfriend barely gets a swimsuit?
I mean, who knows? Who knows?
I was kind of bored by all of the wrap up stuff because it was so patchy.
Mm.
And more than anything, the actual plot about, you know, Hal Jordan going away and coming back and hammering a rock of Green Lantern,
pure will
or whatever, and then but with a hammer and someone making a ring out of it. It just felt like, you know, it looked great. Ethan Van Sciver did a great job on the art, but like, I don't know. I felt you could explain what happened in this issue in 10 seconds.
Yeah, I agree. I do know what you mean.
I'll do it in 2 seconds.
Nice.
Hal Jordan's back, baby.
Hell yeah. I mean, fine. It wasn't the parts of Green Lantern that I find especially like interesting or cool.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it goes in a direction that is more interesting and less like every single Green Lantern story that we've seen before.
Yeah, just make him a space cop.
Space cop shit. That's all I want. Like the best, I think, like some of the best Green Lantern stories of all time, if you really go back, like things like, I can't even remember what it's called, but the Alan Moore story about Mogo.
Oh, yeah, that's a
more of
story.
That. Yeah, more of definitely. That shit. More weird space cop shit and less...
I will.
Less
if,
willpower.
If you can't do space cop, do space cowboy.
One or the other. Absolutely.
But again, look, this is just, you can't really judge
this
series off the back of this issue. Whereas I feel like with the Nightwing one, that was like absolutely a sign of what's to come.
It gave
thematically and like, that was quite a good amount of story to read through in the Nightwing Rebirth thing. I don't know, I feel like that was my favorite Rebirth issue so far. Anyway. DC, huh?
We'll see how it goes.
Just regular ass issue number one of New Superman, which is a comic that we've been quite excited about since the announcement of Rebirth. Written by Gene
Luen Yang, is that
thank
his
name? You. Yeah, you're better at remembering his name than I am. But he has written many self-published works and then started working at DC for the last year and a half working on the Superman story.
Mm-hmm.
And I never read any of the Superman stuff, but the general word was it didn't really feel like a story that he wrote. It just kind of felt like more of the same.
Right, okay.
But
yeah, I didn't read any of his other stuff. I'm a big fan of his work.
What are some of his books that he's written?
I really hope I'm not getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure Boxes and Saints was him. No. Boxes and Saints, American Born Chinese.
Chinese, of course. That's his most famous and very great book.
Mm.
This one is about a new Superman who emerges in China. And that was the pitch that we were given.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, with one Superman dying, a new one has to come back. And I thought
Four have to come back every time.
Yeah, well, I thought this is going to be like the New 52 Superman's power, like finding its way to China. But instead, we learn that this is the story of a bully, like a dumb teenage jerk mm-hmm. Who lives in China and bullies kids out of money and has a, you know, he lives with his dad and his mum died tragically when he was younger. But he is introduced to a shadowy organization who basically approach him and say that they want to give him the powers of a Superman. And so it's almost like Captain America, except they, like, you know, purposely found a dickhead to give the Superman powers to.
Yeah, for some reason they can, well, because they see him supposedly defending another kid, they assume that he has the heart of a hero, which seems like a very poor, like, system of figuring these things out if you're going to give someone crazy, crazy mad Superman powers.
Yeah, the crucial thing is that he stands up to a villain at one point. Mm. And, yeah, that act of some, you know, what seems like compassion is what makes them choose to give him the powers. I think this is just not what I was expecting at all.
Oh, yeah?
I still enjoyed it a lot, immensely. Yeah. I thought it was really, really funny. It reminded me a lot of Invincible by Robert Kirkman. I just love the idea that Yang is just going to be given, like, his own little sandbox to play with in which he can introduce Chinese versions of Batman and Wonder Woman, which he does at the end of this issue.
That was pretty cool and fun.
And this whole arc is called Made in China, which is very fun. And the art by Viktor Bogdanovich, who I've not seen before, I really, really enjoyed. I thought it was a really great match. It's like...
Absolutely.
Again, more Invincible comparisons to his artwork as well. It looks a lot like Corey Walker. But really, really fun and vibrant artwork. But yeah, again, like, just not what I was expecting at all. I thought this was going to be... This kind of feels like an indie comic in which they are doing, like, they're doing their version of Superman, except they're doing it in the DC universe. And
absolutely. And I think this is going to be really, like, I think this is going to be one of those characters that's really fun to watch him grow and develop, and they'll totally be like a with great power comes so on and so forth kind of moment, I'm assuming. But I'm super excited to see him get there, and I'm definitely on board for this.
Yeah, but I mean, it has a bit of a, you know, again, another Robert Kirkman book, Irredeemable Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In which a complete, like, horrible person got the Ant-Man helmet and abused those powers. I wonder if this is going to tread similar waters, or he's going to, you know, get his head kicked in by the good guys ASAP and learn how to be a hero that way. Or maybe this won't be a story of, you know, hero and redemption. Who knows?
Who knows? One thing which I slightly wish that they'd kept some of the pre-52 Chinese heroes. I'm just trying to remember what that team was called that popped up in, like, 52, I think, that was...
That was the
Magnificent Ten or something.
The Japanese, they were the Japanese characters. Oh my God, yeah.
The worst.
But there was one guy who, his power was being very rich.
Oh, nice. I don't remember that at all, but that's Batman, isn't it?
No, but he just... That was just his power. He was very rich. Amazing. That's fantastic.
Amazing. I mean, that's the real power.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah.
It?
But there have been various Asian and indeed Chinese heroes in both DC and Marvel's universes. But I remember there have been Iron Man runs, obviously, with the Mandarin. Mm. There are the good heroes of China as well. I think it's really exciting to... I mean, obviously, China is emerging as one of, like, you know, almost can make and break a Hollywood film now.
Totally.
So, and I know that Batman v Superman did not do well in China. It probably would have made... that $1 billion threshold that it was trying to make if it appealed to a Chinese audience. But no one really knows anything about Batman or Superman or people. Like, apparently, like, Chinese audiences were confused that, you know, that they thought, like, Wonder Woman was Superman's sister and all these, like, because that folklore that's so ingrained in our heads from growing up, even in Australia, which is even further away from America, you know, that just isn't a thing in China. So it would be amazing if this book actually get sold in China and
absolutely,
you know, yeah.
But also, I love the idea of, like, a reasonably insular society having their own superheroes. You know, it'd be cool to see that sort of built up and developed, and
yeah, totally agree.
Not just see sort of Chinese versions of Wonder Woman and Batman.
Yeah, more comics set other than America.
Totally.
So this is a week in which I get the amazing ability to say that I have officially reviewed a comic called Lil Poopy Superstar.
Oh, that's so nice.
Have you watched Rick and Morty before, Siobhan?
Well, I've seen, like, two episodes, maybe.
It's a fantastic show.
It is really... I enjoyed the two episodes that I saw.
And I have not read any of the comics so far. Rick and Morty is a show on Adult Swim, co-created by one of the guys who did Community and another cartoonist alongside him. The Rick and Morty comics have been published by Oni Press. I think they're relatively well-liked by people, fans of the show. And Lil Poopy is a kind of character that's showed up in two episodes, I think, of the second season. He is kind of suggested that he's an imaginary friend, but he turns out to be an actual character.
Hilarious.
And in this, we see Lil Poopy Superstar go on an adventure with Morty's sister. Morty is the kid. He goes on adventures with Rick, and his sister gets jealous and is very excited that Lil Poopy is taking her on an adventure this time. But then they go to a world in which Lil Poopy is a superstar.
Amazing.
And it was very, very fun and funny, and the dialogue is quite reminiscent of how they talk on the show. Mm-hmm. But I read this comic in, I think, 2 minutes exactly. And I don't know if that is like something that you know place worth in, like, you know, is a comic worth buying because it takes you 10 minutes, or is it more about the, you know, the amusement found within?
Was it 10 minutes worth of enjoyment just jam packed into 2 minutes, or was it just 2 minutes?
I'm not sure. I'm going to buy the next one of Lil Poopy Superstar. Beautiful. I mean, ideally, you want me to read this and be like, wow, I need to read all of the Rick and Morty comics. But at this point, I'm like, oh, are they all like this? Because, you know, I mean, it is great to be like, oh, yeah, I read an entire run of comics in 15 minutes. But
you do feel slightly like you've wasted your money.
Exactly. but if you've been reading the Rick and Morty comics, anyone listening right now, let us know if that's something that I should endeavor to do. Are they as good as the show? Because apparently it's still like another year until season 3 comes on of Rick and Morty. So I would like someone to fill that gap. Mm. Cool. Image put out a new number one this week. Did you read it?
I did. I just had to give you the last copy.
Oh, goddamn. That's very generous of you.
Yeah, no worries.
As everyone knows, Image number one's a pretty sure thing for a comic that will sell out of its initial run.
Yep.
This one is called Horizon. It's by... I almost read out all of the names at once then. Brandon Thomas. Is he the same Brandon Thomas who did Batgirl? Is that...
No, it's Brandon Fletcher.
Oh, fuck it. Cool. Brandon Thomas, along with Juan Gedeon and Frank Martin on colors. Juan did art on this. This is a very, very beginning of a story. Mm. There's only one thing happening in this story, mm-hmm. and it is an alien crash landing on our planet, and she tries to heal herself after a very violent crash and mm-hmm. find other aliens like her on the planet. So it's a future Earth. And it definitely lays like a small amount of groundwork of a potentially exciting universe. Of course, this comic is not just published through Image; it's through Robert Kirkman's Skybound imprint.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I mean, you know, they have a pretty good success rate when it comes to beloved Image runs.
I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah,
I'm super on board for the rest of the series. I like. I'm very into sort of slightly near future sci-fi at the moment. I think that's quite sort of fun. It's cool when they can make a little bit of commentary on what's going on. I think that's kind of the fun and the point of sci-fi. And I like where this is going. You know, it seems as if humans are the bad guys in this story. So that's quite good fun. I like the main character's very cool.
The main character feels like she's straight out of what's the comic that your favorite cartoonist and writer, Brandon, what's his name?
Brandon Graham.
What does he write? It's like an old...
Multiple Warheads.
No, it's not one of his original series.
Oh, Prophet.
Prophet.
Yeah.
She's
straight out
of Prophet.
Absolutely.
Except, you know, they've never actually been on something that they would say is our Earth before.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's going to be very different from that point of view. But yeah, if you need another space comic in your stack... go ahead and add this one because it's quite fun.
And the art's cool.
It's one of those things that gives you a glimpse into a world and then issue one ends and you have no fucking idea where it's going to go next.
So yeah.
Those are fun. More of those, please.
Absolutely. Good fun.
Did you not read many other number ones?
No, I missed so many. I couldn't see them on the shelf. A lot of the time that happens because I'm too short and I can't see things that are on the top shelf. And I'll be like, I missed like 3 issues of Aquaman just because I was like, there's none left on the shelf. And everyone was like, no, it's just at the
Look
top.
Up.
Anyway, so no, I didn't. I missed the next
You
couple.
Did read the Miller World annual, right?
I did, which...
I can't wait to hear you talk about this. So explain to me what this is.
So this, I wasn't quite sure what this was. This is like an anthology of short stories in the various Mark Millar universes. So Chrononauts, Hit Girl, Kick-Ass, Kingsman, all that kind of stuff. And I mean, so, as someone who's not really, doesn't really read a huge amount of Millar World stuff, I was a little bit lost.
Yeah. So he did a call out on the internet a while ago for young creators to send in their scripts and their spec art
mm-hmm.
for this almost like a competition to get their work published in this anthology.
And that's clearly like the cool thing about this. If you flip to the last page, it's got all of the creators in it, and I think it's extremely cool of Mark Millar to be
totally
giving that kind of opportunity to young creators and stuff. It doesn't mean that like I liked any of them.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, so the I definitely like some of the art on display in this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the art definitely fares a lot better than the writing. But that said, I mean, it goes alongside the what's the Alan Moore compilation, the anthology comic Cinema Purgatorio.
Yep.
In that, you know, my complaint of that was that you only get 4 to 5 pages of a story each month. This is, you know, all the stories are four pages long.
Yeah.
So you're very limited in your ability to revisit these worlds with much depth. So I think the two strongest from a storytelling point of view were the revisit to Starlight, which is probably my favorite Mark Millar comic that has come out in the last 5 years, which is quite hammy, but we learn that the main characters, like, you know, even though he's been on so many grand adventures, there's no better adventure than watching his grandkids grow up. Very
beautiful.
Sweet.
Delicious.
Even though it was a little bit hammy, I actually quite liked the Hit Girl comic called Mindy's ABCs,
yep.
Which kind of told a almost like nursery rhyme, nursery rhyme kind of ABC. A is for alpha, B is for bridge, blah, blah, blah. And all rhymed, and it was, it starts off kind of like, you know, goal, and G is for goal, H is for hazards, and then I is for incapacitate, J is for joints to soften them up, and then suddenly it goes, like, from telling you, you know, little rhymes with each letter, it then suddenly goes knee, leg, medulla, nose, orifice, pupil, quad, and basically, like, you know, as it goes through the alphabet, shows how, like, you know, cutting those things. I thought it was cute.
It's
a very different take on like trying to cram a story into four pages.
Totally. So. And I would be super into this. Made me feel like, how good would like an ultra cartoony Hit Girl series be? Like someone like Scotty Young, just something like nuts and ultra violence, but like adorable.
You could argue that Hit Girl is the main character in I Hate Fairyland.
You really could. You very much could. I also quite liked this American Jesus one. I have absolutely no idea what
actually
that actually
didn't read
relates
that,
to.
Because that's the one of his comics that I haven't read.
Oh, so. What is it? Does he have a comic called American
he
Jesus?
Does, he that did, I just yeah, yeah. I completely missed it.
Oh, well, same. But I really enjoyed the art and I thought it was quite a cool little story, and I managed to understand what it was about, even though I had no idea that existed.
I would get this if you were a massive Mark Millar fan.
Yeah, for sure.
Or if you are one of those people that likes to like, you know, keep your eye on new talent, and and when if any of these guys do become famous writers, you can say you own the first thing they
first
ever
thing
did.
They did, yeah. And I feel like we can be pretty sure that we'll see some of these faces again.
And kudos to, I mean, that there are pictures of all the writers at the back, and kudos to Mark Millar for actually going out of his way to pick a diverse roster of writers. There's there's a few girls in there, not just a bunch of, you know, 30-ish white dudes.
Hey,
they are represented though. Don't worry, guys. Don't send us hate mail. They're in there. So I read a few number ones that Siobhan didn't. So skip forward 4 minutes if you hate me hearing my voice and no Siobhan.
I'm gonna have a nap for 4 minutes.
The first comic I'm very excited about, Mickey Mouse Shorts Season 1.
Oh, I'm so depressed I missed this.
So they've started making Mickey Mouse animated shorts again. Cool. You can view them online. It's a very, almost reminiscent of like Ren and Stimpy style animation, and it's very slapstick. My son, who is 2.5, loves them, but doesn't understand slapstick. So like there's one short where Mickey loses his ears. And it was traumatizing for my son. but that said, I brought my stack of comics home the other night, and I was like, Archie, I got you a comic too.
Adorable.
Because he always sees my big pile of comics. He's like, oh, that's Daddy's comics. Daddy's comics. we read Mickey Mouse together, and what this is just a it's about 5 or 6 different shorts that they've taken screenshots from and then added word balloons too.
Right, cool.
So it's not the most incredible or innovative, you know, kind of comic on the shelf at the moment. But if you have a child that loves Mickey Mouse and you want to get them into comics, this is a great way to get them into it. And that said, I mean, the shorts themselves, if you've watched them, it is fun just to read them again. There are some great gags in there.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. A lot of people aren't unaware of like that Mickey Mouse, as much as like, you know, Bugs Bunny, was you know, in those shorts, you know, five minute animated shorts back in the day. Back in these era in the cinema. What a fun time. That's what, if Serious Issues was a podcast in like the 30s or 40s, we would probably just review the shorts.
Yeah, totally. I'd still do that.
I also read through Dynamite, The $6 Million Man, Fallen Man. I got this because I was a massive fan of the James Bond series that Warren Ellis did over at Dynamite, and the cover is quite reminiscent of the James Bond covers. Sadly, the story is fun, but it's a good deal goofier than the James Bond. I was hoping for something quite like knowingly kind of
knowingly
aware
gritty.
Of what it was and gritty. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that James Bond's gritty. It's just like it's just pretty chaotic and I don't know. Yeah, this is still it's super duper fun. $6 Million Man is a dude who gets fucked up when the government pay for him to kind of replace all of his missing arms and legs with cool high tech robotics that cost $6 million. So hence he is a $6 Million man. There are some really funny little quips in this, and some great use of the part wherever he does anything that utilizes his power in the TV show that uses that din 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 din. I can't do it; it's an impossible sound effect to do. But they kind of write it out as any in this. If you're a fan of the franchise at all, or you know, just want to read a fun robotic Cyclops spy comic, especially if you're an Archer fan. I know a lot of people really enjoyed the James Bond run over at Dynamite because they are a big fan of the TV show Archer. There are characters in Archer that are direct ripoffs of characters from the $6 Million Man. So you might enjoy this one too.
Fun.
Shouts to Barry from Archer, one of my favorite characters. Dark Horse put out number one of Conan the Slayer. Did you read Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan's run on Conan over at Dark Horse about 3 years ago?
Oh, I read a couple of issues.
That was so good.
Yeah.
That was, I've read a few Conan comics. That's probably the only run that I've read from start to finish.
Mm.
And I loved that. It was a really different take.
Becky Cloonan's the best.
The art, obviously, goes without saying, is incredible. This was pretty back to basic. Conan kills heaps of people and kind of feels bad about it, then gets taken hostage by people that are after him. And there's just gore and beheadings and like literally one woman in the entire comic.
Is she sexy?
She may be the most badass person in this. I guess that kind of redeems it.
If you love Conan comics, you're always going to love Conan.
Exactly. It's written by Cullen Bunn. Cullen Bunn is, I think, a creator who is just great at writing completely adequate comics.
Mm.
He just gets the source material and just writes what you would expect from that comic. And that's not a slight on him.
No.
I mean, like, you know, if he wrote the Micronauts comic, which I'm not familiar with the Micronauts, so that I was bored out of my brain reading those issues. But I the general consensus from people that do like the Micronauts is big fans of that comic and what he's done. Things that he's that I've enjoyed, I really like his creator-owned work, The Sixth Gun.
Oh,
Only Press.
Yeah, that was great.
That's a great comic, and it's still putting out, you know, month to month today. He writes so many comics each month. I also really enjoyed his Magneto run a few years ago,
too. That was really good.
Yeah, unfortunately, had to tie into that stupid Axis event.
Oh, God, that was so terrible.
Yeah. But Conan the Slayer, if you have missed more guts spitting and blood spraying at you as you read a comic, definitely pick this one up. Finally, big surprise this week, Kong of Skull Island. Number one of six out through Boom Studios, written by James Asmus, and art, and this is the reason why I bring this one up, art by Carlos Magno, who is someone that I've never seen him before. Colors by Brad Simpson, which is a name I'm a bit more familiar with. But the art in this, if you just want to see two pages of just two big old gorillas just punching each other in the face.
I mean,
the level of interest, I would compare it to like a less out there James Stokoe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible pencil work, great inking. Just, man, this is like,
you know what I would love more than this Kong of Skull Island? I would love, do you remember that series that was Age of Dinosaurs or something? It was this completely silent series.
Oh, wow.
Just about dinosaurs. I want this guy to do one about monkeys.
Yeah, for sure. The thing that lets you down in this is that this book is obvious. Unfortunately, I don't know what just happened then. I got a case of monkey hiccups. The story focuses on the people more than the monkeys.
Boo.
At least in this issue, while they set up the world that we're in of and the discovery of Skull Island, which is a place that invites death. But, I mean, just from an art point unbelievable of view, who gives monkeys. A fuck about the story? The art is so good in this.
It is just crazy.
You know,
incredible, like intricate line work.
Pterodactyls just attacking ships while monkeys drown and volcanoes exploding in the background. Really, really great stuff.
Yeah, so, amazing.
I will absolutely, just from an art point of view, be picking up the rest of Kong of Skull Island.
Yeah, and I will try to find it on the shelf.
It reminds me a lot, to bring it back to James Stokoe, yeah. That I've brought it up before, the Godzilla Half Century War,
yeah.
Which I think is one of my favorite titles from the last few years. This reminds me a little bit of the beginning of that, not from a story point of view, but from an art.
Mm.
Yeah. Cool.
Amazing.
So that's first things first. Done. Lots of new number ones. I reckon I'm going to stick with half of them.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
You didn't even read half of
them. Yeah, I know.
let's chew through all these DC titles. Starting with Detective Comics. We initially were like, yeah, this is okay when this started.
Yeah.
The everything fell into place in this issue. This is by James Tynion IV and a new artist on this one. Who I've never heard of before, but goddamn, I'm going to be seeking out everything else they've done.
Yeah.
Alvaro Martinez. This was such a good comic.
Such a good issue. I love that if there's one thing that... what's his name? The guy who...
James Williams III?
Is
that his name? We know everyone
anyway,
knows who
that
we're
guy.
About, that guy.
But I love that he is brought into like the Batwoman sort of universe, that you have to do something interesting in terms of like the panel layout,
yeah.
And that kind of stuff, because there's some really... like even that first page where you see her life... In the beer glass that she's drinking, like
so good,
so clever. Brings in Renee Montoya, hell yes,
totally. And listeners of the show will know that we are big Renee fans over here.
Mm-hmm.
But like that interesting panel work just continues throughout the entire issue,
mm-hmm.
but without being like overly difficult to find. It was
reads
beautifully
very well.
Told, and I was not expecting this book to be as good as it was. Because
totally.
The first two issues were fine, but this was just incredible.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's such a, I mean, if you know anything about Batwoman and you know about her relationship with her father and the fact that he's sort of playing around with that feels very like shocking and confronting and all those things, but in a very earned way. So it doesn't just feel like he's doing it just for shock value.
Absolutely.
It's easy.
No, totally. And that, the twist is like that classic twist that like, you're like, oh, of course that was going to happen. But you still like, were like, oh shit, when it happened.
And there's so much like, I mean, the team is such a bizarre group. And I love that, you know, you still get to see little bits of their lives and what they're doing separately away from the
Definitely.
Group. Like, I love that Clayface is still going for auditions.
Yes,
like,
absolutely. Yeah. So this is the team up. Batman pulls together Batwoman, Clayface, Spoiler,
Orphan,
aka
Cassandra Cain.
And Tim Drake, Red Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And then quickly Batman gets taken out of the picture and looks like it's up to these guys to save Batman. But this is definitely Batwoman's comic overall.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it does a really great job of balancing the characters. I feel like the only character so far that hasn't really been given enough of screen time is Spoiler. But you'd hate her anyway. So
oh, yeah. I was going to say, I feel like Cassandra Cain needs more time, and that's clearly my bias in that I love her. Well, I was going to say, though, that I really love this artist. He does an amazing physicality for Cassandra Cain, I think, and like there's a panel where she's sort of leaping through the air and it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And I think that's very important for her character. So
yeah, well,
I'm
not,
down.
Not only is she leaping in the air, you actually see it. It's, you know, she's jumping horizontally,
like
but the page is upside down. So yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like this book. I'm very glad that we stuck with it. And you should definitely check it out too. Detective Comics number 936. I feel like you don't even really need to know what happened before this.
No, yeah, you can really just grab this. And one thing which I need to say about all of the DC comics this week, though, is I hate this.
Yes.
Just stop putting 5-page ads in the middle of your book. It's so irritating. And I hate this one.
No, I like this one. It's
what?
So dumb.
No,
it's
suck.
Actually
you're the
good
problem.
Dumb.
No, it's bad.
So in the 4 pages in the middle of this book, Batman and Superman are confronted by Doomsday, and then Superman says, oh no, not again. And then Batman says, I'll handle this. I have a Snickers.
Boo.
And then Batman says to Doomsday, you get really cranky when you're hungry. And then they all eat a Snickers. And Wonder Woman shows up and says, ah, much better while holding a Snickers.
No, she was Doomsday. That's the joke.
Oh, God. Are you serious?
Doom, like Wonder Woman, when she's hungry, turns into Doomsday, apparently.
Oh, I hate
and then,
that. That's
yeah,
fucked.
See? And then Batman's like, you should see what Robin's like when he's hungry, which A, makes it sound like they're in a relationship, which I know they are, but like...
Which Robin? His son. Yeah. His son's Robin no. at the moment.
Well, I don't know. Anyway. It's all very bad.
Anyway, this episode is brought to you by Snickers, nuts and more. Yum, yum, yum. Mm,
excellent.
Good when you're hungry. issue number two of The Flash.
Excellent.
By Josh Williamson. And you do his last name here. I'm not good at it. It's a great last name to if you're pronouncing it right, but it's a hard one.
DiGiandomenico. Carmine
DiGiandomenico.
Amazing.
That's actually fine.
Perfect.
This was a whole bunch of fun. It's good,
yeah.
Good to read A Flash again.
Absolutely.
This long story short, there are more lightning storms, and Barry's partner gets Flash powers, and so Barry takes it on himself to teach him how to use his Flash powers for good.
Mm-hmm.
And then that guy works out that Barry is the Flash, but then
obviously because it's like his best friend.
And there's a shadowy organization who are aware of these storms. In fact, they cause a massive storm to happen at the end of this issue, and it looks like everyone in Central City is going to get Flash powers.
It's very reminiscent of Spider Island.
But told them a kind of more fun, I think, drawn out, smaller scale.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I like it. I like that it looks like Iris is going to get some cool Flash powers. And
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'm down.
Because that was like the funnest part of Spider Island, like when Mary Jane was incredible at using her spider powers because she's been with Peter for her whole life.
Yeah. She's like, I could have done this better than you the whole time.
And finally, the big DC book that we were extremely excited about this
week.
Wonder Woman number 2. This is the first issue of Wonder Woman Year 1, mm-hmm. Written by Greg Rucka with art by our beloved Nicola Scott. First thing you need to do regarding this issue is ignore all of the bullshit right now about Frank Cho and the variant covers. Because,
oh, goodness gracious.
I mean, especially, I feel like you are immediately wrong when you blame something on someone's political agenda.
Mm.
When someone says that immediately goes, oh, cool, you are a sexist or racist, so I don't value your opinion.
Yeah.
But whatever, like, Frank Cho can draw the hell out of certain things and blah, 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 but you do not need to see Wonder Woman's fucking underpants on the front of one of her books.
Yeah, we were all talking about this in the office earlier. And I think that the problem really comes... Because I can see Greg Rucka's perspective. I can see Frank Cho's perspective equally well. I think that they're both right and both wrong. I think that the problem really was DC saying they were going to do one thing and then doing another. And so they said, Frank Cho, you would have creative control over things. And then they told Greg Rucka, actually, you will have final creative control. And so it's just a fucking...
Yeah.
It's just a stupid mess. And it's very... It's annoying.
We said we were going to ignore him. We told you to ignore him. And then we did not. So whatever. We don't even listen to our own advice. God damn it. Cool. So this story, though, ignoring all the bullshit.
Yep.
This was, I think, better than the issue one.
Agreed.
Of Wonder Woman. Obviously, not just because of the art. Art was, you know, the best iteration of Wonder Woman you've ever seen.
It really is.
You don't even see her in her you know, traditional costume yet.
Yeah.
But you get told a, you know, tragic kind of origin story of Steve Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
And you see
how Diana and Steve's lives mirror each other as they grow up, which was very... I like that.
Yeah,
I think that's
definitely.
Cool. I like that. I hope... It's so rare for, like, a romance to be at the core of a story and a core of a character anymore. I'd like it a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, this is just great.
Plus, fucking Nicola can draw the heck out of a sexy Steve Trevor. I think my favorite bit was, I think Lynn in the back office pointed out, why, like, they have special little booty shorts, like special little
tiny little commando booty shorts.
I'm into it.
So great.
Amazing.
What if it was revealed that Nicola Scott drew the Snickers? I think that should be like the rule. Like, if you're going to do these things, the artist that worked on this issue has to draw their version of the story in which Doomsday eats a Snickers bar. I want to see like everyone's different iterations of it.
Yeah, that would be the best.
Yeah, but look, this is just absolutely a comic you should be reading. Pick it up. Wonder Woman deserves to have as much sales as Superman and Batman do.
Yep, absolutely.
Especially when it's this creative team.
And it's such a cool time to be a Wonder Woman fan because we're getting so many interesting, different takes on her origin story. And I'm super excited to see Greg Rucka, like, where this goes and what he does with it.
Yeah, definitely. Because there is the familiarity there from what we know so far, but there's, you know, a lot more going on than that.
Absolutely.
Real good fun. Cool. Oh shit, we have. I've misplaced Action Comics number. What number is it?
959.
So this is just an ongoing comic that just lives up to its name. It is just action, 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 and who really cares about the rest of the story?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is written by Dan Jurgens with art by someone called Kirkham. And this is more to do with the kind of, you know, it involves the Lex Luthor sort of Superman character and Lois and this extra Clark that's running around.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Which is, I'm annoyed by how, like, into the mystery of that I am. I'm like, why? Yeah. Why is there a separate Clark? Why is that? What's that about?
Infinitely more interesting than Civil War.
Yeah, it really
like,
is.
Like the mysteries in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's different about this comic compared to the rest of the DC comics so far is that we're 3 issues into this and we've only advanced, I think, like half an hour.
Yeah.
It's been 10 minutes. But it's just, you know, you see every punch of the fight and it still maintains your interest through right through to the end of the issue.
My only problem is I just still do not care about Doomsday. I think he's just the most boring Superman villain and I just wish they'd chosen anyone else.
Sure.
Anyone that doesn't, like, Superman shouldn't always just be like a brawn over brains battle. He should... Definitely. There should be more
Bring Brainiac back.
Yeah, bring Brainiac
he's
back.
He's the best. He's probably my second favorite after Lex.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. I mean, look, if this is still like just a really good Superman comic, obviously the actual Superman series that we reviewed number 2 of last week, that's my preferred Superman book.
Agreed.
Right now.
But this is not a bad one,
dude. It's so much fun.
Yeah,
and a great. And, you know, this is definitely is one of those comics that is improved because it comes out every 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you just get a little bit more of the action.
Yeah,
Action Comics.
One that I read that I know you didn't is Legend of Wonder Woman issue 8. This is, I think, the penultimate issue because I'm pretty sure it's finishing at 9. So this is Diana fully in costume, fully ready to defeat the Duke of Deception and all of the villains. This just continues to be such a fun comic. I'm so excited for this to come out in hardcover in December.
So I can read it.
Yep, because it's
and you've only read like amazing. From issue 4 or something, right?
Yeah, from issue 4, but has like is easily
one
of my favorite comics
out
there.
Should
have
done the same.
You can get it all digitally, but...
Oh yeah, I should do that too.
Because it was actually digital first, and you can tell that in some of the panel structure.
Right.
But it still reads very well as a single.
Awesome. Should we complain about Civil War 2 now or after we talk about all the indies?
Let's just get it over and done with.
Okay, cool. So Civil War 2, number 3, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by David Marquez. Mm-hmm. This was fucking... I don't... Here's the thing.
Yeah.
No matter all the dumb, stupid, pointless things that happen in this book...
Yeah.
I still finish it and go, well, you know, I'm still going to read the next issue. It grabs you enough that when it does stupid things, you actually feel more offended because you are invested in it. But this is just a bizarre issue, which is just, you know, classic Bendis doing all talking, no action.
All talk, no action.
And all the superheroes acting completely out of character.
And just, and like, bonkers. The thing that annoys me the most about this, and I'm sure it will have annoyed other people too, is that everyone goes, oh my god, the Hulk's going to attack. We better go talk to Bruce Banner. Bruce Banner isn't the Hulk right now. There is another Hulk. There is another Hulk in existence. Why would Iron Man not know about that? Why would Captain Marvel not know about that? And it is completely ridiculous.
And that's the Hulk that it looks like.
It's fucking clearly Amadeus Cho. Yeah. Like, it's so irritating. And like, they're obviously foreshadowing that in the Hulk comic, where like, Amadeus Cho has been having some blackouts while he's Hulk. But I'm sure he'll be fine.
Yeah,
obviously,
yeah, yeah.
He's not going to be fine. Obviously, it's Amadeus Cho. And it's just, it's so irritating that every single, like, all of the smartest people in the Marvel Universe are for some reason, just overlooking that. You know, at least acknowledge it and go, oh, but we don't think it's him.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Hey, guys, don't worry, because at least Bruce Banner died.
Yeah, yeah. At least.
So far, the death count in this in Civil War 2 is...
Rhodey.
War Machine is gone. She-Hulk is potentially dead.
In a coma. She better not be dead. She better not be dead, you guys.
And now Bruce Banner.
Was killed by Hawkeye.
And I love that, like, whenever... that there are so many moments in this book where the characters cry with, like, full-on anime tears just streaming down their face.
That's the best bit.
Yeah, sure. You like all of your male superheroes shirtless and crying. Yeah. We get it.
that's a comic I would read.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of interested in the backstory in which it's revealed that Bruce Banner told Hawkeye to like, you know, that if it ever comes to it, he's the one that has to kill him.
Yeah. yeah, I like his reasoning of, like, you're the one who wouldn't feel too bad about it or something. Like, you're the one who could get over it, which I think is inherently insulting to Hawkeye.
Yeah. Where are we at now? What happens next?
Who cares?
Yeah, we still haven't really... I guess we're finally starting to see people starting to take sides, kind of.
Mm.
We certainly haven't been seeing people choosing sides in the comic Choosing Sides, which we'll review later. But I guess the we find out in issue 4 of this that Tony Stark has worked out how Ulysses sees his visions.
Right. Yes.
I don't know.
I am interested in that. Annoyingly, I'm interested to know what Ulysses
Yeah, but you're
are.
Interested, like, to read it about it on Wikipedia, not really to, like, I can't wait for the next issue so I can find out.
Yeah,
also,
totally.
This is clearly a much bigger trial than, like, your regular, like, you know, isn't Matt Murdock, like, a local, like, a smaller crimes lawyer? Why is he, I don't know.
Like, people don't know he's Daredevil anymore. He shouldn't be the go-to superhero lawyer.
Well, I mean, you can't use She-Hulk, because she's might be dead.
Comed.
Thanks, Brian Bendis, for doing it again. Anyway, this story remains very enjoyable and annoying.
Yeah.
I think I want it to piss me off as much as possible.
Yeah, whereas really...
Is that a great way to go into reading a comic? I hope I hate this.
I mean,
that's healthy, right?
I did have a genuine what moment when I was reading that at my desk on Thursday, which is kind of like, I mean, you kind of want comics to do that. You want it to have a big emotional response, I suppose.
And yeah, sure.
The death of Banner definitely did that.
Yep, cool. Should we fly through the rest of Marvel titles?
Yep.
I want to start with an incredible comic that I love so much.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
I just want to just speak an entire hour about how much I love it. And that is The Vision, issue 9 by Tom King with Gabriel Walter on art. This was just, I mean, we say it every time this comes out. This is the best comic that Marvel's putting out.
It just really is. And someone called it the Breaking Bad of Marvel, I saw.
Holy shit.
But like,
wow, that's a really, really...
Very accurate.
Yeah, yeah, in tone, absolutely. Mm. It's endlessly entertaining with a huge slab of tragedy on the side.
So heartbreaking. This was a very heartbreaking issue as well.
And it's not just heartbreaking for Vision and his family. I mean, you get... What's his name again?
Victor.
Victor. You know, his addiction to vibranium.
Yeah.
Which is such a clever thing, which I don't think I've ever read
in
Marvel. Like, of course, these, you know, things with different properties and different attributes. Like, you know, that addiction, even though it's like, you know, it is kind of played out like a, you know, a drug, don't do drugs kind of cautionary tale. It's still really powerful. And I don't want to spoil it. Like, I have no problem just spoiling Civil War 2 for everyone each week without a warning. Sorry if I spoiled it for you. Not really.
Sorry,
but I don't want to spoil this, if you haven't read it, I just want to tell you that you need to fucking
read
it.
Yeah, you just need to read it. I mean, it's such a rare treat in a superhero comic, I think. And, like, it feels like a part of the Marvel Universe, and I like that, you know, we're going to see the Viv, is that her name? The Vision daughter. She's going to be in this Champions team with Nova and
all the younger heroes.
And that's kind of cool. Like, I'm psyched to see this play out in the rest of the Marvel Universe, but it is also just a perfect little standalone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I just think that this is just a perfect comic.
It really is.
And as gut-wrenching as every issue is, like, I can't wait for the next one. And I, you know, there's such a level of mystery, even though they tell you what's going to happen.
Yeah, like, even though we know it's going to happen, that last page was still like, oh.
And you finally see what was predicted to have happened in the first issue. It finally happens in this one with his poor neighbors. Did you see that?
Which one?
Because the blast shoots from his son, shoots across the road, and you don't see it happen. But
Jesus.
so good.
Holy moly.
And the coolest thing about, even though this is ending and that's a bummer, like, so at the moment I'm reading Batman, The Vision, and Sheriff of Babylon, all by Tom King. I will love them all. They're all 10 out of 10 to me. This, The Vision and Sheriff of Babylon, I think both end in like 3 or 4 issues. So we are soon going to have an announcement of what Tom King is going to do next at DC. And that is very, very exciting.
Very exciting.
Also, we get a Batman comic next week.
Yay!
Crazy.
I'm excited.
I'll talk about it quickly. The Mighty Thor number 8. This came out ages ago if you do not get your comics from Australia. But annoyingly, Diamond fucked up the order and a lot of Australian suppliers of comics did not get this until last week.
Classic Diamond.
Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman on art. This is, I awarded this my favorite Marvel comic of last year, and it's still, like, definitely up there. Unfortunately, Absolutely. Vision kicks it in the dick. But this was such a great, not just a celebration of everything that Jason Aaron has done in Thor so far, but actually a celebration of everything that he's done in Marvel since he started working there almost. Because you see, like, a whole bunch of different bad guys that he's worked on in all of his other comics leading up to this point. So you see, like, you know, like, one of the main bad guys from Original Sin shows up at the end, and you see the new Silver Samurai who was who he anointed in his Wolverine run. So too, you see, like, members of, like, the little girl who represents the Hellfire Club, that he introduced in
Wolverine
the X-Men run. Like, it's just so many different characters that he's worked on just coming to here, and it's just really, really awesome.
And he's doing such an amazing job with Jane Foster as a character, like, all of the sort of ongoing complications with her being sick and the fact that she chooses to live all of her time on Asgard now. Just Such a great comic, such great superhero.
Yep.
Comics.
Such great superhero.
Great superhero.
All right, so we had a lot of Civil War II tie-ins this week. Choosing Sides number 2 is the little comic that the anthology comic with 3 different stories for 2 different characters. First up was a comic called War Machine, but it was about all of the black superheroes in the Marvel Universe reacting to his death, which we kind of got already in the Sam Wilson comic. This is the guy who wrote the miniseries Princeless, if you've ever read that.
Right. I know the one.
Which is all about a reaction to there being no princesses of color in Disney until recently, and he kind of, you know, filled the void as he saw necessary. They're really, really fun comics, great for kids. Great art by Marguerite Sauvage.
Man, she needs a series. Is she on the interiors of anything at the moment?
I don't know.
Cause this is, like,
she just pops up everywhere.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I'm kind of into that too. Like, I don't know where she's going to pop up next.
She can draw the heck out of a storm as well.
Then we get a really unnecessary comic about Goliath, who died in Civil War, the original one by Mark Millar. I don't really know what this is leading to. Is there going to be a new Goliath, or I found that one really hard to follow.
Yeah, I didn't even.
And then finally, we get the the next part in Declan Shalvey's Nick Fury story, in which he pretends to be Moon Knight, all the different incarnations of Moon Knight to infiltrate an enemy's base. This is great.
Yeah,
this is
super great. Fun.
And given the big jump in time, the fact that this just appears at the end of an anthology series, it makes sense now. Whereas the first issue, I was like, why can't this just be a regular comic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, cool.
Not very cool.
Choosing Sides 2. Pretty fun. Mm. And normally those anthology comics are pretty hit or miss, but they're mostly hits so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, given the Declan Shalvey material is so good, that's a good thing to have in there.
I usually enjoy the weird anthology side comics more than the actual event. Like, I always love, like, the little stupid comedy ones where they make fun of the event.
Yeah,
like
totally. There was a great Howard the Duck one in the original Civil War that I remember. Gods of War number 2 by Dan Abnett. It kind of continues Hercules' story and introduces a new band of heroes for him to team up to beat the villains that only he can see. So no one else in the Marvel Universe can see him trying to battle these villains, and they just see him kind of like raging out on himself. So pretty soon they're going to try and take Hercules out because they think he's a risk to the world when they can't see what he's battling. I mean, wasn't that much of an eventful book, but it's still fun.
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. I like his sort of, I like the sassy Theseus and Beowulf. That's pretty funny. I like that he's sort of getting the band back together. I'm excited to see.
And
there's
some Asgardians in the mix too.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
Really fun.
New Avengers, Civil War 2. I have no idea what's going on in this comic.
Oh man, I know, right? I'm super confused.
Yeah, there is a book coming out called, is it USA Avengers? Is that the name of it?
Something like
so
that.
Marvel introduced a whole ton of comics that are coming out up post Civil War 2, and we'll talk about them, I think, in the future, I guess, as they get solicited properly. Which ones we're excited for? We're excited for a few of them.
Yeah.
We already mentioned Champions.
That's probably the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, there's a few great announcers, like Mark Rosenberg, who does Four Kids Walk Into a Bank and did that awesome Kingpin story. Mm-hmm. He's doing a Kingpin book and a Rocket Raccoon book.
Oh, nice.
That's great news.
Great news.
But Al Ewing, who writes the New Avengers, is taking over for that USA Avengers one, which looks really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep reading New Avengers so that he can set that up properly, because it looks like a continuation of all this stuff. But... Mm. There are characters in this that I've been reading this comic for like 6 or 7 issues from now, and obviously I've been reading the whole run, but I'm like, who is this?
Yeah.
Who are you? What are you? I don't know.
But all these characters are like, they're obscure enough, and I'm not enough of like a, I haven't read enough old Marvel stuff to necessarily understand who any of these people are, and it gets a little bit confusing. I wish that there was slightly more of a recap.
There are a lot of subplots going on here.
Yeah, there really are.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to make someone a triple agent. That's mad confusing.
But in any case, I'm going to keep at it. You put Old Man Logan in my pile this week.
Yeah, I did, and then I didn't read it.
Oh, well, thanks for doing that. It was actually kind of good.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah, because this was a direct response to the original Old Man Logan story that Mark Millar wrote, in which Old Man Logan, who's now in the regular Marvel Universe, is having a sleepless night because he thinks the events that that kicked off the horrible world that we see in Old Man Logan. He thinks that the events are about to unfurl that night. So young Jean Grey takes him through New York to show him that everything's fine, and he kind of tells her what happened in, like, you know, because Old Man Logan is set like quite far into the future after all these horrible events, including him killing all the X-Men, happens.
Mm.
And so he takes them through New York, and you kind of have flashbacks to all the original events of what led to the Old Man Logan kind of world come into play. And so you see, Daredevil and Punisher make their last stand, and Punisher gets killed by Kraven the Hunter, and you see Hank Pym fall down. And it was actually cool. A really, really enjoyable issue.
And I really like Sorrentino. I can't think of what his first name is, but he's Andre. The guy. They worked together on Jeff Lemire's Green Arrow run. Mm-hmm. And I think he's just got a really cool style, and it really seems to suit the Old Man Logan.
Yeah. So I haven't been reading any of the Old Man Logan series, and I was happy to have this like one shot, which I was having only read the original Old Man Logan stories. It was just fun.
I got nice.
Totally revisit it.
Oh, good.
Silk number 10.
Yep.
I don't remember what happened in this, but it was fine.
Yeah. Still just Silk double crossing Black Cat, except Black Cat knows now, and now she's going to fight her.
Who is the guy that showed up at the end of this? Hector?
Oh, I forget.
Great. Moving on.
Power Man and Iron Fist?
Yes, that's what I was looking for. That's the last Marvel comic. I've got some Archie and Dark Horse and Boom stuff coming up. Power Man, Iron Fist number 6, one of our favorite comics going on right now.
Tying into Civil War 2.
David Walker writing this one, and art by the fill-in Flaviano, my favorite name, and rapidly becoming one of my favorite fill-in artists. We saw him on the Grayson comic last week as well. This was probably the first comic that tied into Civil War 2 that actually successfully portrayed the emotion that that is caused by losing War Machine and knowing that She-Hulk is in hospital, critically injured. This is just a great, showed Luke Cage actively deciding that he was going to sit this one out because he was such a big part of Civil War, the original event. But I feel like you could enjoy this just having, not read those comics and just, it's just a great book.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that you can see that they're going to get dragged into the Civil War II action, whether they like it or not. I always think it's funny because part of this is that they're sort of fighting against a group of vigilantes. But why should they have authority over other vigilantes? It's that's always a confusing.
Well, because they're like
they have
they're
powers.
Being quite rough, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but I like this. I think that this is a good interpretation of the Civil War II thing. I think that it sort of treats the issue quite well. And
yeah, I totally agree. And the art's fantastic.
That is fantastic. I'm
yeah, Padman Iron Fist, definitely one of the most fun books that Marvel putting out right now. That's just an immediate one that I pick up and read when it comes out.
Yeah.
Oh boy, Goldie Vance number 4. See you later, Woo! Marvel. Hello, Boombox. We've championed this series since it came out, and it was originally going to be a 4-part series, and then that was it. But I hope that the reason that it's been continued, it's now just going to be an ongoing series. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's because
it's
been
because
really, really popular. maybe because of us. Goldie Vance is a young female detective, and this has been written by Hope Larson, who's about to take over on Batgirl next week, and drawn by Brittany Williams, who we also very much enjoy on Hellcat.
Mm-hmm.
This was this could have been the final Goldie Vance story, but we are getting more after next month.
But this wraps up the first story arc.
Yeah, and it's definitely a little bit of a romance comic as well.
Yeah.
Whether it's just a romance of just, friendship or actual,
I think it's actual romance.
Yeah, I'm into it either way. I really, really liked it. This was just a really fun and sweet comic. It's
just such a joy to read. I really can't recommend it highly enough. And I don't even want to go into sort of what happens in this story. It's all just kind of detective work and wrapping things
that's
up.
That's not important.
It's just the most beautiful, fun, lovely book.
Yeah, give this to every teenager you know.
Yeah, really, absolutely.
Every teenager.
Every teenager.
A Goldie Vance for every teen. is there anything more we need to say? This has been one of my favorite comics of the year so far, and we probably will award it like best all ages comic at the end of the year.
You hope so. It didn't get nominated for any Harveys, which I find crazy.
I guess because it was only like one or two issues in by the time they announced that. But this and everything Tom King's done are like already those cemented like, oh, that's my favorite writer or my favorite series kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Already knowing that for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
People are going to try pretty hard to beat these. Yeah, Goldie Vance, really good. Another all-ages comic that I read this week came out through Oni Press called Space Battle Lunchtime, which we know at Serious Issues as the comic that Siobhan forced me to get issue one of and then stopped reading. But I thoroughly enjoy it, so I'm reading it. It's about a Iron Chef-style bake-off happening in space with heaps of aliens and one lady from Earth. And it's just beautiful cartooning, and the story is super fun.
It looks like it's really, ideal for kids.
Yeah, absolutely, and that you're starting to see proper friendships form within this kooky world now, and it's a joy to read.
So fun.
It's super duper fun. Really good. And Natalie Reese, who writes and draws this, is definitely someone to watch after she completes this, because she's really, really good at doing the all-ages comic thing. What should we talk about next?
Oh, well, see, I missed this one.
What's this one?
Archangel.
William Gibson. Don't worry about it. I'm probably not going to read anymore.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just a kind of half-interesting time travel army comic.
Right, yeah.
I don't really care, man.
Fair enough.
See you later.
See you later.
Same goes with Weavers, issue 3 by Boom Studios.
They'd put a recap page in, because I'd completely forgotten everything that happens in this series, and I'm mad confused by what's going on.
Yeah, as we're two people that love reading comics as single issues, and it's sometimes a bit disappointing when you can tell something has been written for a trade,
yeah.
Pretty much. I feel like the momentum of this would be great if you just read it all in one hit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I guess I'm not lost. I'm just not invested really either.
Absolutely.
And I don't really like that title character at all.
So. Yeah, so far there's not much character development for him, and there's not much that makes him a sort of intriguing or interesting main character.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that he has a weird spider power thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I kind of don't care.
Yeah, same.
Soz Simon Spurrier, who was very capable of writing many, many good comics.
Mm.
Sherlock issue 2. This is the Sherlock manga of the first run of the Sherlock series,
mm-hmm.
With old mates Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
I loved this issue so much, and I really want to watch all of the Sherlock series, and I will. But I kind of want to wait until this book is over so I can just have this story told to me in this way, because this is just a beautiful method of storytelling.
It really is. It really, like, they do an amazing job of capturing, like, the fun and the spirit of the show, but still making this, like, a compelling story on its own. It's such good cartooning. It's such good art.
And it's so good to see the art that the manga artist Jay has done blown up to a regular comic size.
Mm.
Because, you know, your average manga novel is smaller than your average novel, let alone a comic book. So, this is just a joy. Absolute joy.
Absolute. So much fun.
Yeah. No more needs to be said.
Mm.
Revisionist number 2. Another book I'm dropping this week. That's all I need to be said. See you later, mate. House of Penance. Oh, did you read Revisionist number 2?
Yeah, I did, but I don't know if I read issue 1.
I don't think you did.
Yeah, cool. Excellent. That explains a lot.
Yeah. Actually, you know, maybe I did like this one, kind of. I'm confusing it with Archangel. This is like another time travel one where a guy's dad visits him while he's in prison from the future and sends him back to the 70s in New York and tries to communicate him and makes him basically do a bunch of assassinations or something like that. And then he rewrites time. You know what? I'm going to stick with this.
Yeah, I thought it was quite
disregard
cool.
Disregard what I said earlier. Frank Barbieri and Gary Brown. I guess it's just, you know, when you read a whole stack, it's like, oh, do I care? You know what?
Another
I do
time
care.
Travel army story.
I'm just
what
trying to read less comics, you guys.
I'm pretty sure
I hit 40 again this week.
Yeah, I read so much.
Sabrina.
Yay!
Issue 6.
So fun to get like a Sabrina comic.
Yeah,
sort of
just so soon after the last
after
one.
Slightly after the last one.
So this was an origin story for Salem, who is Sabrina's familiar, the talking cat, beloved source of comedy in the shitty Sabrina the Teenage Witch TV show.
How dare you?
But in this, it's obviously considerably darker. And I mean, I would just read an entire story based in the world that he was in before he got turned into a fucking cat.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Yeah. Have we raved about the artwork on this book yet?
Robert Hack is so amazing. Like, it's such a non-traditional, I feel, comic book style,
it's
unbelievable.
A demented kids book from, like, the 60s.
Yeah, it's so scary.
It looks like Enid Blyton covers, like, just nightmare visions of them. Yeah.
Absolutely, that's exactly what it is, and he does just unbelievable work. And the colours are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always have to like read this in the middle of the day when there's people around, because if I read it at night, I'm too easily spooked. It was so spooky, but it's so good.
My wife won't let me watch Stranger Things on Netflix because she thinks she's going to have nightmares. But I want.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Totally right. I really want to watch it. Also, this is worth picking up because we get a little teaser of the Archie Riverdale TV show.
Yeah.
Coming out on CDW, and it looks really, really cool.
I'm so excited.
Haunting vision of like a sunken boat.
Mm.
Very fun.
Plus, you also get a classic, much like in the Archie series, they put in a classic Sabrina story at the end, which has art by Dan DiCarlo, who I just love.
Yeah, and that's great, and it works really well after reading a Jughead or an Archie comic, but after reading this totally grisly, dark Sabrina comic, I don't want to read
a
really goofy version of Sabrina,
no matter how great it is.
I want it. Yeah, you need to stop the nightmare.
Yeah, totally.
Speaking of nightmares, House of Penance, number 4.
Spooky cover.
Oh, my God. This is such a good, crazy book that I'm going to do a terrible job explaining. It's written by Peter Tomasi, who we are currently loving over on the Superman comic, art by Ian Bertram, and similarly like on Sabrina, it's really great horror cartooning that's like eerie without being gory and just unlike anything else that you see. Like, you know, these are quite obvious, you know, cartoon versions of people, and there is some grisly stuff that happens, but it's
Lovecraftian.
So, so good. Horror comics are actually, I hate over-the-top gore comics.
Mm.
I like gore when it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
but,
like Headlopper.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to Crust.
Yeah, oh, God, yikes. but I really do like a proper spooky horror comic, and House of Penance is definitely filling that gap for me.
Also, if you guys want to look at some other spooky horror comics, the King Staff all chose our favorite horror comics. You can check that out on Facebook. There's some good picks there.
Yeah, definitely. What did you pick?
I did Through the Woods, which was a compilation, like an anthology of Emily Carroll comics. She's like just... Like, it's the scariest thing I've ever read. It's the most
well,
I've
shit.
Ever been.
How
but,
many,
like, amazing.
How many spoops
so
did you get?
I got 10 spoops. Give it 10 out of 10 spoops.
Excellent. You read the new Heavy Metal?
Hell yeah, I did. So, Heavy Metal is the world's greatest illustrated magazine, according to itself. But it's exciting because the last two editions have been edited by our very own Grant Morrison.
Our very own.
My special Grant Morrison. And this was a funny issue. This was issue 281.
It's all about
it's
sex.
The sex special, which obviously Grant Morrison is... I mean, if you've ever seen that picture of him doing modeling, he's a sexy man. but so this was like... I mean,
is
this
he?
Was...
You're
no,
for Grant Morrison?
No, I don't. But he's a man who's interested in sex, clearly. but so this was like just short stories from some amazing people. The only person the only artist I recognized was Jay Bone, who is, if you follow him on Instagram, loves drawing some sexy beefcake men. And so he definitely did that in this.
Jay Bone used to be Darwin Cook's inker.
Ah, well, it makes a lot
of
sense.
Stuff, yeah.
But yeah, this was great. I mean, if you're going to read an anthology, you might as well read something that's edited by someone who... Like, I think The Island is amazing, and I think Brandon Graham has a lot to do with that, and I think Grant Morrison is doing some amazing things with Heavy Metal. So if you want more sort of European-style comics in your life, I definitely recommend
I'm so angry at myself for not picking these up already.
Yeah, totally. It's really good. Highly recommend.
I read the most recent issues of Descender and Wicked and Divine, which are two Image books. One's written by Kieran Gillen with art by Jamie McKelvey. The other is written by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. And just letting you know that they are both real good this month.
Nice.
Wicked and Divine was a comic that I considered dropping at around issue 10 to 14 or something like that. And I pushed through, and now it is like the best it's ever been, and is definitely... worth picking up, not only for the comic, but because in the letters section, they did a reader's poll, and they had people kind of let everyone know, like, their age, their gender, and the gender that they identify with, whether they're trans or other, their sexuality, where they live, how much they spend on comics a month, and whether or not they pirate comics. And so you have this incredible, selection of graphs in which it collates all of that data. And I just found that really, really interesting.
Yeah, like, I'm actually going to read that for professional purposes.
It's,
you know?
It's incredible. And it goes without saying that if you want to say that the average person who reads this comic is a 19 to 28 year old white male, but beyond that, like, there's 48% of readers are male, but beyond that, the breakdown is crazy. And especially the coolest thing was the different sexuality.
It's cool to see something like that actually printed out, because you still get into these weird, like, I'm still always having conversations with people who are surprised that there are so many women reading comics, when it's been a 50-50 split almost for, a long time. So it's cool to just have that sort of printed out.
And then even the discussions of whether or not people pirate comics is interesting too.
Do people pirate comics?
Yeah.
Boo if you pirate comics. Boo.
And then Descender told the backstory of a character that I did not care about. one of the, the equivalent of the Empire, whatever it is in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Her backstory, and it's a really, really incredible issue that ends with a bit of a gut punch. Totally nice. Worth checking out. Descender's a really good book. You should catch up on Descender.
Yeah, I know. Those are two books that I probably will catch up on in trade, I think.
Yep. Cool.
I also read a bunch of trades this weekend because I hate myself, apparently. I love comics.
Come on.
One that I was really excited about. I'm always excited about a new new manga, especially something that's just a one-off. This is one called Wandering Island, which was written and drawn by Kenji Tsuruta.
Nailed it.
So terrible. And it's about a young girl who runs a... air delivery service company with her grandfather. Her grandfather then dies in slightly mysterious circumstances, and she finds all of his research about a wandering island which appears every 3 years. And she becomes obsessed with that and obsessed with finding a way to it. And it's just Yeah, really, really good. Great story. Amazing.
Fantastic.
Highly recommend it. Also out in trade is they are reprinting all of Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman run, which is excellent timing considering he's back on the book. They reprint Hikatia in this, which is an awesome, awesome Wonder Woman story. Really, I hadn't read it before, so I was very excited to check it out.
Up by G.J. Jones?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Where she's standing on Batman's face.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is excellent. But yeah, that's super worth, super worth checking out. This is all the stuff where Wonder Woman was the ambassador of Themyscira, and so it's all sort of political as well as being just cool superhero shit, and I loved it.
Well, so you read that from cover to cover?
No, I got about halfway through.
Okay, right.
The one I did read cover to cover, though, and which we didn't get any orders for this, which just blows my mind because it's unbelievable. The Adventures of Dieter Lumpen, which is written by George Zentner and Ruben Pelejero. This is like classic European style comics. Has an amazing intro by Tim Sale, which I think gives you an idea of the level of craftsmanship that goes into the art.
Definitely.
It's unbelievable. Like, the art is so, so beautiful. This is like if Tintin grew up and had sexy adventures, and it's amazing. this is the entire collection that these guys did together. This is every single Dieter Lumpen book comic that was ever made, and it's so worthwhile.
Awesome.
Highly recommend.
I would like you read a lot of European comics, and I feel like a lot of those are pushed on you by Jim from King's Comics.
Yeah, well, I mean, generally, if something comes in that's European, I'm pretty interested in the first place because I feel like there's just so much stuff, and the second it gets translated, I definitely want to read it. And Jim has this unbelievable wealth of knowledge about Euro comics.
We should do
and
a little special in the future.
Yeah, we really should, because I have so much that I would love to push on to other people, and this is just another one.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that is it for the show so far. That's everything we read in the last week.
Nice.
Did you read more than us? Fuck you. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't. No one did.
If you think you did, hit us up with an email, or you can just ask us some questions. That email address is seriousissues@kingscomics.com. We're going to be answering a few questions quite soon in the next few weeks. We know we owe a certain listener an X-Men special.
Oh, yes, we do.
That will be... Maybe we should do that as an entire separate episode thing,
maybe,
because that'll take up hours of our time, especially if we ask our friend Nacho Pop to contribute.
Absolutely.
We'll just have like 90 minutes of us arguing with him. It'll be great.
Where he goes, no, Jim Lee and Chris Claremont, and that's it.
If you want to find us on Facebook, where we've been putting up some funny pics along with some cool stuff that that we like, you can find us at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast.
Mm-hmm.
Some comics are coming out in the next week. You know what you should buy? Betty and Veronica, #1. I think this might be the most anticipated comic coming out in quite some time. It's written by Adam Hughes.
With art by Adam Hughes, which is
huge, because he does not write nor draw many things these days.
Mm.
There are 25 variant covers to this first issue.
And they're all amazing.
Oh, there you go. You've got...
I think we put them all up on the King's Facebook page a little while ago, so you can check them all out there.
We'll share it on Serious Issues.
Amazing stuff.
We're also getting Sombra, #1, which is a new comic coming out through Boom, written by Justin Jordan, about a Mexican police officer, which sounds really cool.
Cool.
Black Hammer is a new comic by Jeff Lemire coming out on Dark Horse.
Looks amazing. There was a preview of it in most of the Dark Horse comics from this week. I really highly recommend people check this one out.
On the DC front, we get Batgirl Rebirth #1 and Hellblazer Rebirth #1, which are two comics I'm very excited to start reading again. We also get the first issue of Justice League, and
the first issue of Snot Girl, which I'm incredibly excited about.
Which is written by the author of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, Brian
Lee O'Malley.
You got it.
Art by Leslie Huang, I think.
Don't pardon me, I'm just dying over here. We get a new image #1 called Hunt, and alongside Snot Girl #1. And Darth Vader's series over at Marvel comes closer and closer to its final issue at #25. And Valiant give us a Faith #1 as well.
Cool.
So lots to read.
And I have a few little announcements. We have Queens of Kings happening this Sunday. We're talking about Ms. Marvel. This is our King's Comics Women's Reading Group. If you fancy coming down and having a chat about Ms. Marvel with a bunch of cool, geeky ladies, that'll be happening this Sunday, the 24th of July, at King's Comics at 5:30 p.m. Be lovely to see you all there. I also wanted to announce that Kings will be holding our first ever indie comic sale and zine fair on Saturday, August 6th. I'll be putting up more information about that really soon, but we've got some really exciting, cool local artists coming down to table, and it's going to be really good fun.
I saw the artwork, the posters for
them. Yeah, they're looking good, right? I'm super excited. Jay Bowles is killing it.
A good friend of mine, Jonathan Valenzuela, who does amazing comics using clip art, has designed a bunch of selection of incredible posters.
Yeah, so we're finishing them off today, and hopefully we'll have them up soon.
Yeah, amazing. Very excited for that. And maybe we can do a spotlight where we talk to some of the zine guys.
That would be really cool.
We're trying to do some more serious issue stuff in the future beyond just reviewing 40 to 50 comics a week.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because we should definitely be doing more than that for sure, right? cool. You've been listening to Serious Issues. Again, you can find us at facebook.com/serious issues podcast. And if you like what you heard and want to hear more of us and want to spread the word, the best way to do that is to head to iTunes and leave us a review on the iTunes store. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.